Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 16th, 2014. This is episode 1109. Enjoy. The Tech Guy is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Yes, that's me, the tech guy. There are, I have learned, other tech guys, but they're a tech guy. I'm the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. The Tech Guy Show is all about technology. Although I have to point out that, if you were pressed to define technology, you probably wouldn't necessarily define it as computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater. That's a kind of technology. But so is a zipper. So is a pencil. I think we're going to define technology as anything that wasn't around when you were born. Then that's technology. To Henry VIII, a fork, that was technology. That was state of the art, man. What is this? What is this fork thing? Can you imagine a tech guy in the era of Henry VIII? Today we shall talk of forks, buttons, and the newest thing, the trebuchet. But no, this is the 21st century tech guy. So we talk about stuff that's new to us, the internet, and all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. TMZ got it wrong. Don't get all excited. TMZ purports to have, TMZ, the gossip channel, this is actually, to me, a measure of how, and this is why it's hard to define what technology is, how what we consider modern state-of-the-art technology has it seeped into such cultural consciousness that it's just part of our life now. So we're going to have to redefine technology as being the next new thing. When you see a gossip channel like TMZ discussing we've got rumors on the iPhone 6, then you know it's now. Let's point out that they got it all wrong, but still the fact that they have photographic evidence of wireless charging. Don't listen to TMZ when it comes to this kind of stuff. Not yet. I think in years to come, TMZ will be a very credible reporter of technology. Check the slot at the top of the phone under the camera near the speaker, they say. We've talked to techies, and it appears to be a sensor for wireless charging capabilities. I don't know what techies they talked to. That's where the sound comes out. Okay, we talked to techies. I talked to techies. Also, by the way, the device they showed had an operating system that wasn't, in fact, iOS. And wireless chargers pretty much are on the back of these things. I've had quite a few phones with wireless charging. I've never seen a slot. And it's never on the front because then, well, you'd have to put it face down on the wire. But anyway, it's okay. It's okay. It's quite all right. I think what we're going to see, by the way, they're subtitled Drool Geeks. I find that a little insulting. Like, we don't drool most of the time. It was an Android clone, by the way. It was not an iPhone. I have one right here. I should send it to TMZ. We got this in China. Looks just like an iPhone. But when you fire it up, what you get is Android. And the reason, there's a big market for these fake iPhones in China and other places because the iPhone's very, very expensive. Actually, it wasn't technically even legally available in China until very recently. So there's a market for these. It looks, the interface, the Android interface is made to look exactly like an iPhone, but it's Android. So they got fooled. They got fooled. And I shouldn't mock them. Because after all, this stuff is mainstream. Almost any story nowadays has a tech component, doesn't it? So this show, I guess, I mean, in a way, we're covering modern culture, but it's also we're covering the latest stuff, the smartphones, the home theater. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, will be here in 20 minutes. I'm excited. We're going to talk a little bit about something going on right now. It's a yearly challenge from a company that sells smart TVs, that sells HD TVs. Every year they round up five or six of the very, very best TVs and then bring in super experts, really good people, to look at them and decide what the best TV of the year is. Scott's not there, but his colleague is, and we're going to talk about the Value Act Challenge. I can never remember the name. It seems like a strange name. It's a Long Island television sales company. Scott'll tell me. Big anniversary this week. The IBM PC came out on August 12th. Do you remember when? Remember how long ago? 1981. It's 33 years old. The IBM PC. That's what really put personal computing on the map. We had Apples and, you know, Radio Shack computers and Commodores and stuff. But when IBM, Big Blue, did a personal computer for your desktop, that's when it became real. That was the era when people said nobody ever got fired for buying IBM computers. That you don't say that anymore. IBM doesn't even make computers. I guess you could say nobody ever got fired for buying Microsoft today, maybe. 33 years old. My friend Matt Honan, who writes over at Wired Magazine, we've had him on the show. He was the guy whose all his accounts got hacked. Once again, another experiment. Matt's willing to really ruin his digital life for us. This time he says, I liked everything I saw on Facebook for 2 days. Imagine if everything you saw on your Facebook news feed, you just clicked that like button. He said, I couldn't do it on the web. That would have been just crazy. Although I think that's another interesting experiment. Press all the like buttons. By the end of 2 days, his friends hated him because, of course, they were following him on Facebook, and their feed started getting full of things Matt Honan likes. That happens, right? You see your friends like. But the real problem was, his news feed was basically filled with ads. My feed, he says, became a cavalcade of brands and politics. And as I interacted with them, Facebook dutifully reported this to all my friends and followers. Facebook Messenger head popped up, and it was his old editor at Wired, John Bradley, said, Have you been hacked? Have you been hacked? So not only if you liked everything on Facebook, not only would it ruin your feed, but it would ruin your friends' feeds. Now we found a new way to bother your friends. Like all those brands. Like all those ads. Speaking of Facebook, there's a bit of a furor going on. Facebook has, on the iPhone and Android, separated the Facebook app out from the Messenger app. So you'd be able to read your Facebook messages within the Facebook app. Not anymore. They require you to download the new Messenger app. We talked about this last week. And the new Messenger app bugs you. I just took them both off. Also, people very concerned about privacy issues with Messenger. The things Messenger asks on Android to do, like make calls on your behalf, scare people. I don't think there's any reason to be scared, but it was just a great excuse to take Facebook off of my phone. I still have a Facebook account. I still have it on my computer, but I won't waste time anymore standing in line at DMV reading Facebook, which is good. That's a good thing. I like it. 8888 Ask Leah. We could talk about that. Anything on your mind, I'll be glad to help you with any technology issues you have. Problems with your zipper, I'm the guy to call because I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls are next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Uh-huh. 8888 Ask Leo. Scott Wilkinson coming up, our home theater geek. He'll give us a progress report on that value challenge. The best TV of the year. What will it, whatever will it be? Meanwhile, Heather Hammond has been collecting the phone calls, gathering fine people to answer their questions or make comments or suggestions. Who should I start with today on the show?
Larry is just down the road a piece in Mill Valley, California.
Okay.
Hey, Larry, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I'm a little stressed because my computer crashed, and this probably will be an interesting dilemma for you. I have a backup done with Acronis True Image. It's a mirror, it's a ghost backup.
I'm familiar with it, yep.
Okay, however, the program, when I restored, I did a Dell PC restore with Dell DataSafe Backup, which then backed up all my data, allegedly all my data onto the hard drive. I've restored all that, but now, of course, I'm faced with the dilemma. Do I reload all my programs from scratch, some of which were downloaded and on the hard drive? So there's a dilemma there. Or do I do the Acronis restore?
So I think it's important to understand what an image, a drive image is versus a backup. They're both part of a larger backup strategy. So there's I think sometimes we think, well, this is the backup. And really, you have to think more globally than that. So a Acronis True Image like Norton Ghost, the original, and a lot of other programs makes a kind of freeze-dried copy of your drive exactly at that moment. That includes everything. That includes Windows, the applications, the data, all the settings, everything. Should you restore that, it will wipe out what's on your drive now and replace it, bringing you to that exact moment when you did the image.
Well, that was about a week ago, so that wouldn't be too bad a deal.
That's what an image. That's where an image is very, very handy, because okay, without having to reinstall apps or anything, it takes you back. So, but you know what it doesn't do is whatever happened since you made the image.
Well, and that's okay, because I think the glitch happened. I got an error message, which, you know, flashed across the screen, something about a WinDAT file, and I think, and it happened like 2 days after the last upgrade.
Good.
Of the Windows
now,
update.
It's likely that you may be having hard drive problems, so I'd really want to validate that hard drive before you put too much reliance on it. Usually, this is the first thing that goes in any computer because it's moving. It's a moving part.
I've listened to you for quite some time. I ran SpinRite on it.
Oh,
I bought SpinRite.
Good man.
SpinRite.
Oh, you're great.
And I couldn't tell if it corrected anything, but it seemed to run okay.
If SpinRite gets through okay and gives you an A-OK, that drive is good to go. So, yeah, I would use – so this is good. I would use the Acronis image and restore it, and you'll be back to 1 week ago.
Okay, and then I can just – whatever I lost between that, I don't think it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Okay, but just parenthetically, though, I tried at your recommendation a couple times to install Carbonite.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it wouldn't install on my system, and both times I called their tech support, and they tried to escalate me up to a different level. And they couldn't do it with what they suggested, and they wanted me to give them control of the computer. And having listened to you for so many years, I decided I didn't want to do that, even though it was Carbonite.
Yeah, in this case, that would have been all right. It's actually a very common practice in tech support to do that. You just only want to do that with somebody you absolutely know is who they say they are and are trustworthy, as Carbonite is. If it's
okay.
If it really were Microsoft and you had called them, that'd be okay. Microsoft does not call people in their homes and say, let me get into your computer to fix it. That's dangerous. You're absolutely right.
So for future, it probably would be a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
Then continue to do that along with
I'm curious why it won't install. My guess is, I'm almost certain, you have some security software on there that's preventing it.
We disabled that, and it still didn't work.
Yeah. You know, the problem with disabling security software is it doesn't want to be disabled because a bad guy... You know, it's resistant to that because a bad guy would do the same thing, right?
And it's ESET, which you also recommend. I'm a loyal
supporter. Oh, good. I think there might be a conflict there. But, yeah, those guys, it's up to you whether you really want to use Carbonite. Here's why Carbonite is a good adjunct to the Acronis True Image. So it's that interval between when you image and when you want to restore. The truth is the best time to image is when you first set up the computer. The first time you install Windows, image it. Now you've got a fast freeze-dried reinstall, then do all the updates, install all your apps, get the system to how you want it, And before you start churning it up and using it, then image it. And then from that point on, make backups. And periodically, if you do a big update or a service pack or something, you might want to re-image. But every time you make another image, you're kind of copying all the flaws that have crept in between the install and the image. So imaging, to me, is about a quick reinstall, getting all the applications back. You know, that's the only convenient way to reinstall applications. Otherwise, you have to get the disks and do it. And if they're downloads, you have to download it and do it. And you may not have that file anymore or the serial numbers. And so it's very frequently the case that, you know, reinstalling apps is kind of, you lose stuff. An image of any kind, a drive image of any kind, gets around that. But it is not, and this is why I talk about an overall backup strategy, it's not in and of itself sufficient, because then you want to have something, an incremental backup that is backing up your data after the imaging. Because you don't want to image every day. You don't want to even image every week, really. That's not. It's a much more time-consuming, thrashes the disk more process than you really need it to be. So image whenever there's a big change to the system or you do a reinstall, and then do the incremental thing. And by the way, I would do both local and Carbonite. The idea is to have three copies of everything, two different forms of media, and one off-site, which is what Carbonite does. I know this sounds like a pain, but the truth is it isn't. The image is the biggest pain. Make that image only when you do big updates. The rest of the time, once Carbonite gets installed, whatever, I'm not sure what's blocking it, that you don't even think about. And then I would also do a local backup so that you can get, you know, you erase a file, you don't have to go online to get it. You can get it right away. Just there it is. All of that goes together. In fact, Carbonite for Business has a appliance that does both local and cloud. I really believe that's kind of – that's the strategy I use, by the way. Image plus local plus Carbonite. Those three together give you a real sense of kind of security with your data. Larry, I'm really glad you have a backup. And losing a week, as you say, often is a minor deal. It just depends. If you're writing the Great American Novel and that's a whole chapter, that's not so minor. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Scott Wilkinson's coming up, and we're going to find out how it's going, what the best TV so far is. Last year in this challenge, they picked, as did most reviewers, the Panasonic Viera plasma TV. That's not there this year because Panasonic has stopped making plasmas. So what has succeeded the plasma as the best big screen TV? We'll find out about that. 8888 Ask Leo. Everything I mentioned, by the way, and we'll put links to some of the backup things I've talked about, including a link to a great article on backup from photographer Peter Krog. I've mentioned this before, his 3-2-1 backup strategy. It's good to understand this. We'll put that at our website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. More of your calls and Scott Wilkinson right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guru, is here. He's editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, host of the Home Theater Geek podcast, twit.tv/HTG. And the Value Electronics Challenge begins in just a few hours. What is that, right, Scott?
Well, Value Electronics is a retailer in Scarsdale, New York. And obviously, they sell TVs. And now for the last 10 years, this is the 10th annual event, Value Electronics is hosting what they call a flat panel shootout. So the owner, Robert Zahn, gathers together what are generally considered among the best flat panel TVs and puts them in a light-controlled room. He's got an interesting situation there. In his showroom, his retail showroom, actually has curtains, and it can be really light-controlled, unlike most retail showrooms. And he puts them together in a wall, and he has several very good calibrators come in and calibrate all the sets perfectly to do the very best they possibly can. And then he invites end users, you know, video enthusiasts, consumers, and professional journalists, AV journalists, TV reviewers, to come and spend a couple of days looking at these TVs and evaluating them and scoring them on a sheet according to several picture performance characteristics. You know, how good are the blacks? How good is the motion detail? How natural are the colors? That sort of thing.
And he's going to stream this live. I don't know if they've done this before, but 6 p.m. Eastern tonight on live stream, Value Electronics will be streaming this. Scott has a link on his website, avsforum.com.
That's right. Right on the top of the homepage.
Is this going to be exciting?
Well, for video geeks, absolutely.
Or is it going to be like watching a chess match? I mean,
Well, in addition to the judging, to the evaluation, there are also going to be several presentations by industry experts. Oh, and neat. I think those are what's going to be the most interesting to view on the live stream. For example, Joe Kane, the video guru I've had on my show a number of times, is going to give a presentation. Dr. Larry Weber, essentially the inventor of plasma TV, is going to be there and give a talk. Now, of course, plasma is on its way out, as we know. And the only plasma in this year's lineup is last year's winner. Now, you mentioned on the air that the Panasonic VT60, ZT60, Viera TVs won last year's shootout. And they did among the professionals. See, the judging is separated into consumers and professional reviewers.
What are the consumers like?
The consumers preferred the Samsung F8500.
Well, glasses. That just shows you why you go with the professionals. Was a Samsung an LCD or a plasma?
No, it's a plasma.
Yeah.
It's a plasma. And the consumers got it by... preferred it over the Viera by an average, I mean, the total scoring of like 0.1.
Oh, you know? All right.
It was very, very close. And we think that the F85 won the consumer vote because it's quite a bit brighter than the Panasonic.
Right.
And brightness, as we know, often trumps most everything else when people go shopping. I mean, that's why one reason why LCDs became so much more popular and got the lion's share of the market. Because when you go into a store with a bunch of TVs, the LCDs look very bright and the plasmas look kind of dim by comparison. They can't do anything else. They're limited in that way. So anyway, the F8500, which was the consumer top pick last year, is in the shootout this year because Robert always does that. He puts last year's winner in with this year's current crop. Now,
that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it's like how far has the technology progressed?
But you can't buy it anymore.
You can, actually.
Oh, you can.
The F8500. The Panasonic is no longer available, but the F8500 still is.
But so he didn't put the Panasonic in, just the Samsung?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And that's the only plasma in the shootout.
That's what's amazing. The last plasma standing. Wow.
I know.
So are there 4K models, UHD TVs?
There are. Absolutely. He's got four of them in there. He's got an LG, two Samsungs, and a Sony.
Now, who chooses these finalists?
Well, I think Robert does, kind of based upon what is commonly out there in the world of video enthusiasts.
Yeah.
You know, already people have bought some of these TVs, and some of them have been reviewed already, and they're generally very, very well regarded. So he kind of takes a informal consensus among those of us who follow this sort of thing and then makes his choice.
Do you think he chose well this year?
I do. All of the 4Ks are LCDs, which makes sense because that's all that's available. There are no 4K OLEDs yet available. Now, he also has at least three 1080p models, including two OLEDs. The Samsung, which you have, and the new LG, which is quite a bit less expensive. It just came out, and it's $3,500 for a 55-inch set. So this is just showing us how quickly the price of OLED is coming down, much faster than I would have expected.
So who do you think is going to win? Do you have a favorite?
It's a very good question.
It doesn't seem like 4K should be in the same competition as HD.
Well, and to tell you the truth, I don't actually know whether or not they are being evaluated separately or not.
That seems unfair.
Well, you know, maybe. And yet, if you're looking for the best TV you can buy today.
Right. I guess so.
Maybe it'll be a 4K. Yeah. Maybe it won't.
And do they consider the fact that there's little content available? That they don't consider that. They're just saying this is the best looking TV out there.
Exactly. And one of the reasons they want to look at 4K TVs is to see how well they upscale Blu-ray, how well they upscale 1080p. And if they do that really, really well, maybe they're going to outpace the 1080p models. It's hard to say.
Now, of the eight TVs, at least seven, possibly eight,
yeah.
There are four Samsungs. Half of them are Samsungs, two LGs, and one Sony, and a possible Vizio.
Yep.
Is that weird, or...
You know, some people think it's weird. I think it's a little weird. It looks almost like a Samsung love fest, and I don't think it is. It's simply that Samsung has taken the lead in many respects.
Is Panasonic still in the game, or are they out?
No, they're in the 4K game, certainly.
So they're left out of this?
Well, only because they declined to participate.
Oh.
They were asked. They were invited to participate, and they declined.
But they won last year.
I know, but they partly because they have an exclusive retail deal.
Oh,
and that doesn't include Value Electronics, yeah. and they could have participated. Robert Zahn would have let them in, even though he doesn't sell Panasonic anymore.
Interesting.
But they said no, thanks.
How do you think this? I mean, we've in the past said this is a very good way to judge what the top TVs are. Do you think it mm-hmm. still is?
I do.
Yeah,
I do. It's a consensus vote. I think.
Boy,
it's
my OLED better win. That's all I can say.
It's in there, and I bet you it'll do really well.
It better win. It better win. That was a $9,000 TV. If it's not the best TV on the market, I'm going to be miffed. Well, I have had it for almost a year, so.
Yeah, it's true. We'll know after Sunday, late in the day on Sunday, we'll know. And we will certainly be posting the results on AVS.
And to see the stream live, go to Scott's post at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. And, of course, watch Home Theater Geeks every week at twit.tv/HTG. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
This is cool. This is kind of, I mean, it feels like somebody like Consumer Reports should probably be doing this. But
yeah, it's a little weird that it's being done at a retailer.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And the fact that Samsung, is in there four times out of eight is a little strange.
Well, but if that may not be, I mean, they're like the biggest manufacturer of TVs.
They are.
Surprised
yeah.
that Sony only has one, and that's in the UHD space.
Right. And that is a fabulous TV. The X950B is just an amazing TV. It could win. The other thing that I didn't mention is that some of these are curved and some of them are flat.
I don't know if that is that going to impact.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. When you've got 50 or 60 people in the room, all sort of walking around, they're all going to evaluate the LCD's off-angle performance, off-axis performance, and if once you get way off-angle, A, the LCD doesn't perform very well, but B, the curve starts becoming a little more obvious. People might judge it negatively on that. I honestly don't know. But it's going to be very interesting nonetheless. He's also got a possibly a 21:9, one of these ultra widescreen, 105-inch TV from Samsung. And I got to tell you, that seems a bit like an outlier. Why? To compare that with the other TVs would be a little weird, too. Mm. The other thing to note is that the UHD or 4K models are all pretty big. They're like in the 78 to 85-inch range.
Huh.
Which is, in my opinion, and in a lot of other people's opinion, what you need in order to take most advantage of that higher resolution.
My little 55 doesn't stand a chance, does it?
That TV is a fabulous chance. TV. There's no way around it.
Now I'm going to have to go out and buy another TV. Keeping up with the Joneses.
Keeping up with the Joneses. Well, at least it won't cost you as much the next time. That LG that's in there is $3,500.
That's hard to believe. If that beats mine, I'm going to be peeved.
Really peeved. Yeah, yeah. I don't blame you on that one.
Mightily, mightily miffed.
Yep, indeed.
All right, I'll let you have the helm for a moment.
Thank you so much. So yes, but Leo, the Mex guy asked, but you like your TV, right?
Yeah, but so what? It's not the best.
Web1606 asks, where is that site that I'm speaking of? It's avsforum.com. And all you do is go up to the top of the homepage, avsforum.com, and there will be a big giant picture of Robert Zahn at last year's Value Electronics Shootout. And you just click on that, you go to that article, and there will be a link in there to the live stream that begins in 3 hours and 15 minutes with presentations from Joe Kane and Larry Weber, which, they may be tomorrow. I take it back. Pardon me. They're actually, I believe they're tomorrow. But in any event, it's really going to be a very interesting thing. I'm going to check in on the live stream once in a while. Main guy asked a very great question. Do they ever do a challenge like this for budget TVs? For those of us who think that more than $1,000 is a lot to spend on a set, that's actually a great idea. If I still had my studio, I would seriously consider doing it. I think that's a great, great idea. And maybe I'll suggest it to Robert. Maybe he can do a second one. Of course, he's probably going to be sick and tired of it by the end of this. I'll have to suggest it to him in a few months when he's forgotten how much work this is, because it's a ton of work. I talked to one of the calibrators, Kevin Miller, who is just going nuts trying to get all these TVs calibrated. And I should mention that next Thursday's podcast will be a panel discussion of the shootout with Robert Zahn, Kevin Miller, and Mark Henninger, my cohort who's actually attending. I think I hear the music.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask. Leo, that's the number. Tony in Indianapolis, you're next. Leo Laporte here. Hi, Tony. Hello, Tony. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Yeah, hey, Leo. I got a question for you.
Okay.
Yeah, and Heather had me open up my laptop, but I can't find what I had before. But what I had was, you always said to do the updates, any update you get.
Yes.
So I did this. I had a Microsoft update, and I did it, and it was called Microsoft Error. And like I said, it's not here anymore. But it was, the title of it was Microsoft Error. I did the update.
It was Adobe Error, not Microsoft Error.
Oh, well, it said Microsoft Error.
Said Microsoft A-I-R?
No, E-R-R-O-R.
Oh, error.
Yeah. And so I did the update. It took all this time, however long it took. And then
you did an update called Microsoft Error?
Yeah.
There's no update.
There's no update?
Called Microsoft Error? Why would they update it? Something that's an error?
Well, I think that was just it didn't have the whole name. I think it was like Error Scan, something or other like that.
When did this update happen?
About a week ago.
Yeah, that's about right. It was second Tuesday is when they do their updates.
And you know what? At the end of the update, it had a licensing agreement. And I canceled out of it. I was like, hey, what's this all about?
Yeah. No idea what's going on there, but that doesn't sound right.
And now it's gone, so I don't know what happened.
What version of Windows are you running?
I don't have Windows. I have a Mac. Mavericks.
Well, I'm glad you have a Mac. So why was do you have Microsoft Office on your machine?
Yeah.
Okay. okay, well, let me reboot now because I'm thinking Windows the whole time. All right, so you're on a Macintosh. And that probably was when Microsoft Office update, I would hope. And then the license agreement, I think that's probably okay.
Oh, all right.
It sounds like I'm not sure exactly what it's installing. I would, if I were you, figure that out. The good news is you're on a Mac. It's very unlikely that it's anything damaging to you.
Uh-huh.
So,
Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to have to pay for something. That's what scared me.
Yeah, no. I mean, if they ask for money, then stop. But the license agreement, it probably is an update. I'm thinking maybe Microsoft error reporting.
Yeah, something like that.
And that is because you have Microsoft Office. And maybe they're updating that program. I'm going to just go on the Google and ask about Microsoft error reporting. Yeah, it's an update. You don't need to run it. It's not critical to the operation of anything. It's actually something that's a benefit to Microsoft, so that when you have a problem with Microsoft Office, they'll get some information about it. You can go, if you want, you can go and download it again from Microsoft.com. And if it does at that point ask for a license agreement, then I would just click OK.
Okay.
What it's saying is it okay with you if when there's a crash in Office, we report back to the home office what happened so that we can fix it?
Oh.
And I think that that's harmless. You don't have, but it is not critical to the operation of Office. So the fact that you said no is fine.
Oh, okay.
You don't need to worry about it. So I'm relieved. I was concerned. But now that I understand the full scope of what's going on, I think you're all right.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
I notice whenever I hit software update,
yeah,
all of a sudden it shows that I have an update. I thought...
Isn't it supposed to tell you?
Isn't it supposed to tell you?
It is. So software update just pulls up the App Store and then takes you to the update page of the App Store. And yeah, look, I see I have an update too. It is supposed to apply updates automatically. I think what happens is it doesn't do it right away automatically. So if you check before it got around to applying it, there's probably a setting too, and maybe you don't have that turned on to automatically update. I'll have to look around and see. I agree with you. I thought it was automatic, and in fact, I just launched it, and I see I have an update for an app. So I don't know what the rules are. I think if you go to the App Store System Preference pane, App Store System, you know, under the Apple, there's the System Preferences.
Yeah.
There is a checkbox that says automatically check for updates, and you can, if you want, have it check download newly available updates in the background. Install updates. You can have it do automatically. I don't know if it does automatically, unless you certainly will have to check all of these to make it work.
Okay.
All right. So, again, nothing much to worry about here.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for calling, Tony. All right, Roger, Rutherford, Tennessee, your 5C won't phone home?
Well, sort of, kind of. It'll call home, but the caller ID on my wife's phone at home, half the time it'll show me calling from bizarre places, and sometimes it doesn't connect the call at all.
Who's this? Who's this 409 call? Well, are you? who's your carrier, first of all?
I'm with Mobile Nation.
Aha, that may be something to do with it. And then you're not using Google Voice or some other service. You're using Mobile Nation to make the call.
Yes, that's my cell carrier.
I would check with Mobile Nation if they've got support and say, what's with the caller ID? It sounds like they may be doing some funny things in there. The caller ID comes from them. And it sounds like they may be doing some funny things in there.
Okay.
So I would, that's who's going to tell you why the caller ID. It should always be your iPhone phone number.
Yes.
Yeah, and if it's not... And at home, do you just use the regular phone company?
Yeah, we've got a local phone service out of one of the communities in the area that we get it from.
Yeah. Does anybody else, when your phone, that may also be the source of it. When you call from your iPhone to other people, do they say, who's this? Or do they see your normal number?
They see my normal number.
Ah.
I don't have a problem with anything other than my home telephone.
Okay. So it isn't Mobile Nation. I apologize. It's your phone company, and it sounds like you kind of have an interesting phone company. It's not like AT&T,
no,
one of the biggies, Verizon. It's a community phone company.
Yeah,
I think they're probably doing some stuff, and that's why it's kind of funny. How about other callers to your home? Do they have weird caller IDs?
Well, my daughter also uses a 5C, and she doesn't have any problem at all getting through.
Isn't
my son,
that odd?
Who lives over near Nashville, he doesn't have any problems.
And his number looks normal.
His number looks normal. In fact, the only phone that I can't call normally is my home number.
Well, that's weird. Let's check into it. Hold on for a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, well, I guess people want to talk to Scott. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, thank you so much. Lawn Dog is having a little trouble finding that live link. You go to the top of the AVS homepage, you click on that picture, you'll get to a post which has the link in it. And I admit it's a little it's a little more buried than it should be, and I apologize for that. It's basically there are a couple of words in the second paragraph. Let me just make sure I'm saying things correctly here, but I'm pretty sure I am. If I go to home and then I go to this picture here and then I go to that piece and I scroll down in the second paragraph, it says, fortunately, you can witness the entire event on a live online stream, which you can watch here. Those words, which you can watch here, are highlighted in blue or whatever color might be on your browser. And you click on that and you get to the live stream. I should have been probably more obvious about it, and I apologize for that. But that's how you get to the live stream. And you should be able to watch starting in just about 3 hours from now. Sometimes terminology hurts. Indeed, sometimes technology hurts. Hey, Sybil, how you doing? Lawn Dog found it. Yay! Glad to hear it. Yes, which you can watch here. Unfortunately, Tech Whiz, I am not going to IFA. IFA is the big consumer electronics show in Europe. It's in Berlin, I'm almost certain. And it's kind of like European CES. But I sadly am not going. Wish I were. It's next month. There's also another one, a broadcasters show called IBC. All of these initialisms have foreign language meanings, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but the IBC is in Amsterdam next month as well, and I won't be going to that either. Sad to say. Person asked, please recommend best 4K TV under $2,000. Thinking about Samsung UN50 HU8550 for $1,600. It's a very well-regarded TV. I haven't seen it yet myself. I don't have enough experience with personal experience with 4K TVs to make a recommendation like that directly. But I will say that the HU8550, I'm just looking at the lineup here, is not going to be in the value electronics shootout. But I believe it's pretty well regarded. And if you go on AVS Forum and look for HU8550, you will see probably several threads that talk about whether the people who are actually own it or have seen it like it or not. That's what I would recommend doing to begin with. Rusty Bones, I could always stow away. Yeah, I could go into the wheel well. There you go. Get over to Europe that way. I remember that. How long? It was just like a couple months ago that some kid did that to Hawaii. And the only reason he survived was that, you know, he kind of went into hibernation. So I heard anyway. It's very strange. Not something I would do. Although I'm reminded of the scene from Die Another Day, a James Bond movie where James Bond and Jinx, Halle Berry's character, stow away aboard the Korean plane near the end by jumping into the wheel well. Of course, that's James Bond. UJ asks, what front speakers would you recommend for a home theater that would also perform well in two-channel Onkyo Pure Audio mode? Depends on how much you want to spend. My first thought is the Andrew Jones Pioneer speakers, the floor standers in particular, the SP-FS52, which are, I just found out last Thursday, were on sale at Amazon for like $99 a piece. And I have heard those in two-channel mode, and they sound amazing. They're remarkable speakers. They go down to about 40 hertz, according to the specs, which, you know, isn't – there's one octave more to go for the low, super low bass. So you could add the subwoofer, but you wouldn't really have to. So, yeah, and Mike Heiss in the chat room. Hey, Mike, good to see you. IFA is too close to Cedia this year. Right. That's another problem, is that the one of the big trade shows that I do go to, which I will be going to next month, is Cedia. And that's the Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association show in Denver. And IFA and Cedia do happen to almost coincide this year. So I wouldn't be able to go even if I could. Thank you, person. I appreciate that very much. UJ as well. So let's see. Anybody else have any questions? Oh, Showtime asks, what do I think of the LG Web OS? That's their new smart TV user interface. I haven't played with it extensively, but what I've seen at trade shows, I've been pretty impressed. I think it looks pretty good. Seems to work really well, too. Janisku7 asks, what do you think of DVB standards? I'm trying to remember exactly what that is. Is that the mobile? I think that's the mobile TV over-the-air broadcasting standards, which I have not had any chance to really play with, if that's what you mean. If you want to clarify that, I apologize for not knowing exactly what you mean. Oh, Roscoe says that there's a guy that got killed who tried to stow away in the wheel wells of an airplane in an Air Force cargo plane. So definitely not something I would do. Geeky Pete asked, did I watch Guardians of the Galaxy yet? No, I haven't, but several people have said I should. So, okay, I will. Is it about time to start? I guess maybe it is. Rusty Bones asks, what's the result of the high-res shootout test? That will probably have to wait, but I will be posting an update on that. It's some very interesting results. Basically, those with high-res... You'll have to wait on it.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour two. The Tech Guy Radio Extravaganza, 8888 Ask Leo is the number, the phone number. The website is techguylabs.com. Done a little research for Roger in Rutherford. He lives in a small town and has a kind of unusual phone company, his community phone company. He's also using an iPhone with what we call an MVNO, a carrier that buys its signal, it's carriage from another phone company. It's usually Sprint. Not sure in this case if it's Sprint or AT&T. And the caller ID's not working, and he gets dropouts. It's an interaction between your local phone company and your cell phone company, and the caller ID, the automatic name interface. And it's hard to figure out who's at fault here. I would probably call the local phone company and say, what's going on? But you might also want to make a call to Mobile Nations, your cell phone carrier. They're not interoperating right. And I've heard of this happening before, but unless you get them to cooperate, you're not going to be. And I mean, it's not going to be easy, but maybe they're small enough they'll help you out. Betty in Menifee, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Betty.
Hello. Yes. Hi.
Yeah.
Thank you. This may be an unusual question, but I'm looking for a service that would satisfy the requirement that I have for a solar system that says I have to have 7x24-hour monitoring of my system through a modem or router.
Mm.
And right now I have Verizon Home Fusion.
Okay.
And I'm looking for something that's cheaper than $60 a month.
Well, you already do. They don't want to. Do they want a dedicated circuit that is separate from your existing internet circuit?
Well, here's the thing. We're in a brand new home. The home is not wired at all for any type of phone. I have a cell phone.
No, but it sounds like So this is. Sounds like if they say a router, that's internet access. So you got to talk to the solar company. Yeah. If it's just internet access, then you need to ask them, and I'm sure this will be okay, is it all right if we use our existing internet service? Can you ride on top of that? And they'll say yes.
Well, my existing internet service is my phone, my husband's phone, is a hotspot for our PC.
And I'm sorry. I'm confused. I thought you said you had Verizon Home Fusion.
I do, only for that one reason. That's the only reason I have it.
So you bought it for this solar installation. I get it.
Unfortunately, the solar people didn't tell me that I needed to have a modem/router in order to do the 24/7 monitoring service.
Yeah, it's like a burglar alarm, which requires a landline. We had to put in a landline, which we don't have and didn't want.
Right.
Because the burglar alarm doesn't work without a phone, obviously.
Exactly.
So your solar company wants to have live internet monitoring, and you say you don't want to have an internet service provider.
Well, the situation is we have, where we are right now, we actually don't need it because we use Verizon's hotspot. My husband's
You're using 3G, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have your choice. You can either have the solar or have I think they have you. You can get what you should do is get the cheapest possible internet service. They don't need. First of all, I'd talk to the solar company and say, "Hey, really, you have to have this?" If they say yes, you do. Yeah, and they say yes, you do. Well, then go out to probably DSL would be your cheapest. I don't know how far you are from the phone.
I can't get it.
You can't. You're too far.
Too far. Yeah, and so isn't. In fact, I've called maybe 10 places. I just, like Windstream, Wild Blue, True Connect.
Yeah, and I bet they won't accept a satellite. Those are very expensive, those satellite solutions.
Okay.
So you have to have an internet connection for this solar.
Right.
And the previous owners, did they have something?
No, see, this is a brand new home.
It's brand new.
And we don't even have, we have not a wire going from anywhere into our house.
Here's what I would say. Who's the carrier that you use for your internet right now?
It's Verizon.
It's Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't mean the home solution. I mean the phone solution. Is Verizon also?
Yeah, Verizon, yes.
So, I mean, it's not, you could probably get as little as $30 a month. Get a little Verizon card, since we know Verizon works. But there are other companies that will offer these as well.
Right.
It's basically a MiFi card, and it's just going to be dedicated to the solar. And you're going to shop around to get the cheapest one you can get.
Right, okay.
And that's fine. That'll work for them. They'll won't know. I mean, it is a router, as you know. You get a little thing. It looks like it's a credit card. But what it is a wireless access point. It's a Wi-Fi access point for up to 5 things. It gets its internet through the same cell phone signal you're using for your personal stuff. And you keep it powered up. Yeah. So basically you're buying it its own cell phone.
Yes. Okay. Have you ever heard of Freedom Pop?
Yep. That's one that's free.
Now, I was wondering about that because I was actually thinking I didn't know the reputation. I looked into Freedom Pop about a year ago. They're still in business.
Yeah, it started by one of the guys who started Skype. I mean, it's a reputable business.
Oh.
I wonder if they'll let you use it in this situation because my suspicion is the way that they monetize is with ads.
Okay.
Since nobody except the solar panels will see the ads, They may not accept that. I don't know. I mean, maybe they will. That's a good question. Don't tell them it's just a solar panel.
Right.
I'm not sure what the deal is with Freedom Pop. They have a hub. They call it the Freedom Pop, Freedom Hub.
Right.
That is basically sets up a 4G network in your house.
Exactly. Yes.
They even have an LTE hotspot that's much like that MiFi. If you can get Freedom Pop to work, that'd be fine.
Hmm. Okay. Well, then I might just go a little further with Freedom Pop because that would save.
Yeah.
Because all you're doing is you're just buying, and I am not a techie. I am so far from being this.
You have to understand the normal course of events. Everybody has internet access. It's no big deal to say, good, we're going to make sure the solar panels can phone home once in a while.
Right.
You're in an unusual situation where you don't have internet access in the home. You're using your cell phones for your internet, and we've got to solve that problem for the solar panels. But just treat the solar panels as another member of the family. Give it a cell phone.
Okay. Oh, well, you know what? That's a great idea.
I think that'll work, yeah. I think these energy monitoring systems are pretty robust. In other words, if it's down for a little bit or slow for a little, it's not going to kill it. It's just periodically phoning in to say, well, she used, a kilowatt today or whatever.
So I literally would get a phone for it?
No. You'd get a wireless access point that uses the data and get the cheapest one you can get. Freedom Pop might be a great solution. It uses the data from the phone company, just like you're using it.
Oh.
Over the 3G or 4G, and probably 3G is fast enough, so don't get anything fancier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would be. Yeah, because they did tell me that 3G would be just fine.
Yeah, they don't need. It's not a high speed connection. They're just every once in a while saying, "Well, how much did she use today?"
Okay. Okay. Well,
and maybe you can get your neighbor to lend you some bandwidth.
All right.
Talk to the neighbors. Can I borrow a cup of bandwidth?
Yeah. Right. Can I just tap into yours?
Freedom Pop, you get, if you don't use much, which you won't, it shouldn't cost you anything.
Well, with Freedom Pop, you have to buy it. You have to buy the unit.
Yeah, that's where they make their money, and you're using less than 500 megabytes a month, which I'm sure you will be. It's a good deal. I think I would go with it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So it's like this. If you're watching the show, you're probably a little bit of a, gadget freak. You always want the latest and the greatest. And perhaps you have by now collected in a drawer somewhere a bunch of old phones and tablets and iPods and the like. Can I make a recommendation? Turn those old dust collectors into cold hard cash with Gazelle.com. Gazelle is awesome. And since we know that, I love what they've done. We know that the new iPhone is coming out pretty soon. You might say to yourself, maybe I'm going to get that new iPhone. Lock in today's iPhone price until October 10th. That way you've got plenty of time to see if you want the new iPhone, to see if it's what you need, to buy it, transfer your data over, and then send it to Gazelle. This is what I love about Gazelle. Everything gets at least a 30-day lock-in. And I could tell you right now that this is the time to get a price for the old iPhone because as soon as they announce the new one, that price tumbles, right? But not at Gazelle. You're locked in. That is crazy. These guys, this is too generous, Gazelle. It's just awesome. Visit gazelle.com and trade in old phones, tablets, a lot of old gear. They will give you cash. So far now, 1.5 million products have been traded in at Gazelle for money. Over $100 million in cash paid out to customers. It couldn't be easier. They'll wipe the data if you forget. They'll clean it off. The offer is guaranteed for 30 days, which is wonderful. And now, for a limited time, really, I mean, take advantage of the fact that we're all pretty sure there's a new iPhone. Get a good price for your existing iPhone and lock in that price till October 10th. What a good deal. Gazelle.com. You can get cash, PayPal, or if you do a lot of Amazon, get the Amazon gift card because they bump that up 5%. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Find out what your old Apple or Android phone is worth, or BlackBerry, at gazelle.com. They buy Nokia phones, too. I wonder, gee, I'd love it if they'd buy my broken 1520. Gazelle.com! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Express yourself. 8888. Ask Leo. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by our next caller, Lewis in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Leo. This is my second time calling in.
Welcome back.
And I don't think the people who do the radio show I do on the Student Network would be appreciative of me using saying I'm sponsoring this.
Yeah, no, you are now. You're in charge.
Oh, God.
What is it? What is the radio show? Tell me about the radio show.
Oh, it's the Geeked Mind. It's basically just a show about geek culture and that. And
I love that. And it's on the...
get in touch with you, remember? What? And I've been having an issue getting back in touch.
Well, you're in touch with me now. I'd love to be on. Where is it heard? It's on the university network?
Yeah, and then we upload it online.
Oh, cool. Where can I find it?
Just go to The Geeked Mind, GEEKEDMIND .podomatic.com. That's where I put up all the interview ones.
Podomatic.
But that's not where my question's about today.
Okay.
I'm wondering about a good automated backup solution for my WordPress blog.
Yes. This is a very important thing to do. Are you on WordPress.com or are you self-hosted?
I'm self-hosted at realtakulewis.moe.
Dot M-O-E?
Yeah.
Dot Mo?
It's pronounced Moe, but yeah.
Where is dot Moe?
It's basically for people who are into... it's just like a new top-level domain that's been put out recently.
I love it. Wow. Dot Moe. Yeah,
it's R-E-A-L-O-T-A-K-U dot, Lewis dot M-O-E.
Okay.
And I'll pull up my site.
You have to pronounce it dot Moe? Can I pronounce it like Mo, Larry, and Curly?
I guess you could, but...
All right, so WordPress, if you're on WordPress.com, they back it up for you. You should check with your hosting provider. They may also have a good backup solution for you. That's the best.
My buddy's hosting it for me.
Where are you hosting it? In your closet?
Well, my main host doesn't work with .moe yet, so my buddy who has a thing,
Where's the data stored? Where's the data stored?
Basically out of my buddy's university computer club.
Okay. So if they don't offer a backup, I bet you they back up. I would hope they'd back up.
Yeah.
We certainly back up, on SoftLayer, they have a vault service and we pay for it and they back up. That's the best way to do it because it gets everything. It's like a local backup. But there are WordPress plugins that do the same thing. And I use a WordPress plugin that does does backup for me as well. And the reason I do is it's in addition, it's like a second line of defense in case the internet, the hosting company doesn't do a good job, or I just, want to move or whatever. And what it will back up is your database, your MySQL data entries. That's a pretty easy thing to do. And then if you ask it to, it'll also back up any customizations you've made to WordPress. So there are quite a few of these solutions. I'm not sure which plugin I use. I could visit my site and tell you. But
that's what I was wondering because there's so many plugins and I don't know which one to use.
Mine is pretty good. It does it every day. It sends me an email with the confirmation whether it did or didn't. And sometimes it does. It fails, and it's good to know, right?
Yeah.
But it's usually pretty good. I've not had to use it, so. I'm knock on wood. I hope I don't ever have to use it. But let me just log in and see. Sorry about the silence here as I type. I can't type and think at the same time. I'm logging into the administrator portion of my own WordPress blog and looking at my plugins, my installed plugins. And I use Backup Buddy is the one I use. And, I can't even remember if I pay for this. I think I did pay for it. It's from iThemes.com. And I like it because it's just kind of automatic and transparent. Yeah, it's $80 for two sites a year. So that just depends on whether you want to spend money or not. There are free backup plugins as well for WordPress. It's one of the nice things about using WordPress as a blog. I mean, you hear me talk about Squarespace. The only reason I continue to use WordPress as a blog is because I want to know all the things that can go wrong, because there are lots. Keep it secure and stuff. When you run a website, you really have two choices. You can manage it yourself. And I don't recommend that for anybody who doesn't want to become an expert or an inexpert sysadmin. Or you can do a hosted solution that's managed by professionals. That's always better if you're a business, if you want to stay secure, if you want to keep up to date. Always better to let the pros handle it. But I'm the tech guy, and I'm supposed to be able to know how to do all this stuff. And a couple of other people in the chat room have some suggestions. Akiba is another one that's absolutely free. So I use Backup Buddy, but that's not free. AKEEBA also works. I think there are probably a lot of good, reliable solutions out there that are free. I'm not sure why I pay. WordPress is fun. I mean, I've had a lot of fun messing it up. Right now, for instance, this is on my personal site, not on our professional site, like techguylabs.com. That's not, I don't manage that. I let the pros do that. But on leoville.com, which is just kind of a site I run so that I can keep up on technologies used to run websites. But it's broken all the time. The search isn't working right now. I broke it. And it's one of those things where I don't know what I did. But that's where I use Backup Buddy. Believe me, on techguylabs.com, we have a professional backup solution. We have professional sysadmins. In fact, we're actually going to be moving it to a company that specializes in managing sites using the content management engine system. We use Drupal called Acquia. They're going to handle it all, even more management levels. It's always better to do that unless you want to be an expert. Steve in Mill Valley, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. That was a quick.
Well, it's as quick as I can make it because I'm a little bit wordy.
I understand. I have been using VoIP as a second phone line here at our home for 6 years, and it's been blood, sweat, and tears for all that time for three different providers. And I'm either going to give up on it or get a fourth suggestion, but...
VoIP really is not ready for prime time in some respects. It uses your internet access, right?
Yes.
And if you're having problems and you've had problems with with multiple providers, it's probably just that your internet access isn't reliable enough to use for VoIP.
Is Comcast, you think that could be the problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Comcast happens to offer their own VoIP solution. You ever notice that?
Well, I'm well aware of that.
Every time you talk to them, they say, why aren't you using our phone solution? Why aren't you using our phone solution? Why aren't you using our phone solution? They might have a little competitive angst about Skype and Magic Jack and Uma and all the others. None of them are better than any others. If it's not working reliably and well, it probably won't ever work reliably and well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Poor guy. He waited an hour and a half and then that's all he got. Hold on, Steve. Don't go away. I'm sorry. It's the exigencies of a radio show, Steve. I'm sorry.
Not a problem.
You waited an hour and 18 minutes, and you got that. But so what have you? Who have you used? We're off the air now. Who have you used?
I've used SunRocket before they went out of business, ViaTalk, and PhonePower.
Yeah, I mean, my suspicion is there's not going to be anybody that's better than anybody else because they're all relying on the same internet connection. What kinds of problems have you had?
Disconnects, unexpected disconnects, lots of echo that it comes and goes, one-way audio, and the frequent need to reboot the adapter.
Do you ever use Skype?
Yes.
How does Skype work?
Well, I use it with groups.
Yeah.
That works fine, but I need to make it work for my wife, who doesn't want to. Who just wants to pick up a phone and call.
So here's what I would try, because Skype is the best of the breed. They do a lot of proprietary stuff. If you go to Skype.com, they have a Skype store where you can buy things that look like phones. And it operates just like a phone. You could buy a phone number. You could buy a phone app.
Is it to inside wiring in the house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, you're going to have something kind of like what you already have, which is a base station that is a computer. That's connected to the internet, and then that goes to the inside wiring. Skype, I think Skype actually, if Skype doesn't work, now, of course, Skype's a target for Comcast. That's the best known of the bunch.
Yeah.
But I think also Skype's a little cautious about screwing with them too much. I mean, Comcast is a little cautious.
Right.
Magic Jack has had problems. Uma is another good one that does peer-to-peer. But I think a lot of the times the problems are it's you're trying to use your internet connection and I don't know. I just use Skype. We use, as you might know, if you ever watch our podcast.
I know, yeah. You rave about it.
That's all we ever use. And we've had good results. And we're on Comcast, but of course we're on a business class Comcast.
Right. Well, if I were forgiving and the only person who used it, it wouldn't be a problem. But my wife just wants it to work.
Yeah, no. It's the wife factor. Or the we call it the SAS, the spousal acceptance factor. Try to not be too sexist about it. It could be a husband. But there's some member of the household who just says, it's not my job to figure out this crazy technology you brought in here.
Yeah.
Make it work like a phone.
I know. So I also, could you pass a question on to Scott?
Yes.
I want to get a sound bar, but I want to emphasize the center channel for speech, but I don't know if a 2.1 will do that.
Anything that has a center, 2.1 is not center channel.
Right.
You need 5.1 to have a center channel.
Okay.
Anything with 5.1 will allow you to boost the center channel. As we get older, a lot of us have boosted the center channel.
But then you're not talking about a sound bar.
Well, a sound bar is 5.1. A good sound bar is 5.1.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you can get 5.1 sound bars.
Yeah, you can. He recommends the Andrew Jones Pioneer.
Right, I recall that.
Because it's inexpensive and Andrew Jones designed it.
So that's a 2.1.
If it's a 2.1, then don't get it. The one I'm looking at is a 5.1.
Oh, they have one?
Well, let me see.
The one on Amazon I just looked at now is 2.1.
Oh, yeah. You don't want 2.1. Obviously, you don't. You know, the thing about 2.1 is I guess you can... you know, it's done. It's simulating surround, right?
Yeah.
Let me just look. Andrew Jones, the SB23W sound bar. It says it's 2.1, huh? Yeah, because if it's 2.1, then that's probably not going to be the right. I thought it was 5.1. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what I need is really a small solution. We have too much stuff. We have too many windows.
Again, the spousal acceptance factor.
Exactly. It could be 5.1, but then you got that issue with...
Well, so the soundbar has 6 speakers in it.
Right, I know. Oh, okay.
So they do have a dialogue. I would... You know what? You could send it back if it doesn't work right for you, but I would try this. It does have a dialogue enhancement mode.
That's the Andrew Jones one.
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve. I got to run.
I know. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Johnny Jett is here.
How you doing?
Hey, Johnny.
How are you?
Okay. Now, I know you're not in Toronto, and yeah. I know you're not in Los Angeles. It looks like you got a bamboo rainforest out your window, so I'm figuring you're in either China, Japan, or Hawaii.
It would be dark. Well, Hawaii would be good, but I'm actually in Connecticut.
Famous for its bamboo forests.
Yeah, I don't...
You're visiting Dad.
No, yes, I am.
Oh, that's
so.
Great.
And I'm wearing a T-shirt because I'm about to do the
ALS challenge. You're gonna dump ice all over you?
Well, guess who I'm gonna nominate?
Not me. I've already been nominated.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Good thing I found out.
Good for you. And you're gonna post the video online, huh?
Yeah. Someone challenged me yesterday, so I got some time. Right after this, I got to do it.
Was it another travel writer that challenged you?
It was actually my cousin who works for ALS in Chicago.
They say they've raised more than $10 million additional dollars because of all the attention. You've probably seen people as famous as Mark Zuckerberg's doing it. Bill Gates built a contraption do it.
That's what I'm working on right now. I'm building one right now.
Tim Cook of Apple Computers, Satya Nadella of Microsoft, all the tech wizards have done it. Jason Howell, one of our news guys, are producers here and the host of All About Android did it on a Friday and challenged me.
Okay, so did you do it?
No.
Right.
I'm just going to give him money. I don't like to do that kind of thing. There's too many of these go around.
Anyway,
these things go around. You know, people shave their heads and they say, Leo, why didn't you shave your head? No, I'm not going to shave my head.
Well, my head's almost shaven anyway.
But Johnny, I want to. So if Murray on Travel, who's in our chat room, another travel writer said, I already did it, challenges you. Well, you've already been challenged, so are you going to post that at johnnyjet.com?
I sure will, but I want to talk a little tech first.
Yes.
So did you see that the Aloft Hotel in Cupertino came out with a new robotic bellhop this week?
First of all, what's a Loft Hotel?
A loft. It's one of Starwood's properties. Oh. They're heavy on tech.
Do you have to live in a loft?
No. They're nice rooms. I've actually stayed at one by the airport.
You name a hotel The Loft, I'm thinking I'm going to be staying in a loft.
They're going after the millennials.
Yeah, obviously. You know, young folks. It's hip. It's with it.
Yeah.
What is a robotic bellboy do? What does that happen?
So they call them bolters. There's two of them. And they named them A-L-O. And so let's say you're in your room.
As long as they don't name it L-E-O, I'm okay.
You're in your room. You forget your toothpaste or a towel. All they do, the front desk, all they do is they program it to go up to your room and bring you whatever you want. And then the guest can put in a code, accept it, and they can also, in form of a tweet or in form of a tip, they can tweet, you know, how their experience was with Meet Bolt LR.
Does this Bolter robot have a hand to stick out for a tip?
No, you do it on the screen. So
I'm not going to tip a robot. I'm sorry. No, tips.
You're tipping it by giving a tweet.
A tweet to it, huh?
So it's pretty clever, and you know, actually, when my mom was in a hospital, I remember sitting in the room and seeing these robots cruising by all hours of the night,
really,
because they're delivering the pharmaceutical stuff up to the doctors, and it just goes around. It can make its way in the hospital through the elevator, through the hallways, and this is 15 years ago. I was shocked. So I think it's a great idea, and I think it's going to catch on.
So the human there's a container in the lid. The human puts whatever it is in there and then says, go to room 432. This robot reliably goes there?
Yes. Listen, they had the technology 14,
10 years
15
ago. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
will it bring me drugs?
Well, the ones in the hospital will, but you don't want to.
No, okay. That's really interesting. And the robot connects to the elevator and then goes up.
It's going by Wi-Fi and 4G, and the elevator is powered. The software's compatible. It's ROS powered robot. And
I would probably do that because I feel like I wouldn't be bothering anybody. It's just a machine. So I would then say, you know, I always feel I'm kind of one of those weird people. I feel funny asking for something. So, I don't, you know, I forgot my toothpaste. I'm not going to call down and say, give me toothpaste. But if it's just a machine.
Well, now everyone's going to be doing it because they want to try it out. They're going to get requests all the time. And now they're talking about rolling out. There's only one hotel right now, the one in Cupertino, which is outside of San Francisco, and they're going to have 100 hotels by 2015.
And they never unionize. They cost less than a minimum wage worker, and you don't have to buy those funny hats, the bellhop hats anymore.
That's right. Well, they're trying to, you know, they're saying businesses like Airbnb are giving them serious challenges, right. So they're trying to find new ways to attract these millennials, and that's what they're doing. I think it's going to do it. So it actually goes live on August 20th. So right now it's in training.
You know, part of the issue I have with this is there aren't that many low-paying, inexperienced jobs out there as it is. And we've always been saying, well, at least in the service sector, you don't have to worry about machines, computers taking over. Guess not.
Well, you won't see it at the Four Seasons or the Ritz-Carlton, but
now I guess you better get a college degree, kids, because that cheap, that low-paying job as a bellhop is going away. Wow,
I agree. So I got one more. I got a website for you.
If the robot says, "Come with me if you want to live," what do?
You go with him.
You go with him. Where's Sarah Connor? No, you go with them, right? Okay.
Just you bust out C-3PO or R2-D2.
All right. You got a website for us?
I do. How about hotelwifitest.com?
I like it.
Have you heard of this one?
No.
So, you know, everyone's talking about, you know, they want to have good Wi-Fi at hotels. So now here's a site where you can test the Wi-Fi in the hotel, and then you can share it with everybody. So before you book, you can search and see, you know, how good is their Wi-Fi? Because, you know, a lot of hotels offer it for free, but it's so slow that it's, you know, you have to end up going to the Starbucks down the street. So in this way, it actually kind of keeps the hotels accountable, because if they start seeing all their low numbers being distributed on social networks, no one's going to book.
Right. Now, this is the worst hotel in the world in San Francisco, the Roadway Inn downtown, but it's got 56.8 megabits per second. I'm staying there, and it's free. Wow.
I don't think they have a lot of users yet, but I think it's a good idea.
I think the cheap Wi-Fi, the free Wi-Fi, seems to be beating the paid Wi-Fi in San Francisco anyway. Isn't that?
Oh, I've stayed at really nice hotels where they make you pay for it, which I still don't understand why where the budget hotels that give it to you for free and the expensive ones make you pay. And a lot of times it's slower at the big ones.
I think the only reason the Roadway was so good is there was no one staying there. They have 100.
I never even heard of it.
They have 116 reviews. It's $100 a night downtown San Francisco, you can imagine.
So I'd be interested to have you test it out. And
I
see
won't
what you
be
think
testing
of it.
That out. Thank you.
I'll pay for your room tonight.
In San Francisco, $100 a night is basically a Motel 6. Okay. But it is really, that's good. Okay, so that is Hotel Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, that's .com.
And, you know, don't just use it to see what's good Wi-Fi, but next time you stay in a hotel, add to it. Because the more people who use it,
exactly,
the better those results will do.
You got that right.
Johnny, we're out of time. Save your app for next week, okay? Jett, he's a world traveler. You'll find him at johnnyjett.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the number. Terry on the line from Amarillo, Texas, our next caller. Hi, Terry.
Well, following Johnny Jett and Leo, that's a hard act to follow.
Isn't Johnny great? He's just such a sweet guy. I just adore
him.
He is.
I enjoy everything he does.
Thank you.
I have a 64 gig iPhone 5, and I usually update about every other year, so I know that's coming up. And I was a Windows user and linked via iTunes back then, but I've graduated to Mac. How do I get everything off of the iPhone without losing anything and get it moved over to the Macintosh?
Easy peasy. So are you using iTunes on your Windows machine now?
Well, I don't use the Windows machine anymore.
Oh, okay. You've moved to the Macintosh already.
Correct.
All right. Just when you connect, have you... that iPhone. Have you ever connected it to any computer?
I connected it to the Windows computer in the past. And that's why I'm concerned, because I know iTunes.
Yeah, I think if you connect it up to, I'm not sure, but I think if you connect it up to iTunes on your Mac now, it'll say, hey, you want me to erase this phone? It's a check and see. Maybe it only does that with the iPod. If you can connect it to this new computer and it says, great, I got the iPhone, you want me to back it up there, that gives you a full backup. When you get your new phone, you can just restore from that. If not, you'll have to use iCloud for the backup. A lot of people do that anyway. You just go to the iCloud setting in your settings on your phone, and you say backup to iCloud. It'll use your Apple ID to do that. And you probably have enough space on iCloud if you haven't used it before to get the whole phone.
Okay.
I like to do it to a computer because then I've got a file and I can see it and blah, blah, blah. It's also a little faster to restore. But iCloud will work, too. And when you get a new phone, you can restore from iCloud or restore from the computer. The new phone will actually give you that opportunity. I think with the iPhone, you can connect it to your new computer and just back it up.
Awesome. That's what I needed to know.
That's how you do it. And your timing's good, because the iPhone 5, every other year, Apple updates and really changes the phone dramatically. The iPhone 5 was the last time. You may remember it went big, went from 3.5 inches to 5 inches, 4 inches. And then last year, they just added a fingerprint reader. There weren't a lot of changes. This September, in fact, we think it's September 9th, in 3 weeks, Apple announced the next generation iPhone. And that should be a big jump from the iPhone 5, 5C, 5S, the current version.
Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. Be good. You'll be glad you waited. I'm still wondering. The rumors have been that there would be a 4.7-inch iPhone. I believe that. That's kind of now the minimum size on a smartphone, I'd say. 4 really is starting to feel cramped. And 4.7 is a good size, although you'll see phones, of course, much bigger. The Galaxy S5 is 5 inches. The HTC One, 5 inches. You know, many of the flagship phones are 5 inches or bigger. But 4.7 would be good for an iPhone. There's also a rumor, less credible, that there's going to be a 5.5-inch iPhone. We'll see. We'll see. That seems unlikely to me, at least this year. But September 9th, we'll find out, and shortly thereafter, you'll be able to buy it. And, you know, this is the tick of the TikTok cycle. You know, every other year, they do a big upgrade, and this will be that year. George in Santa Monica, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
And a good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
I'm just curious. When motion picture studios make film or movies nowadays, they're going digital.
That's right.
Now, the DVDs that we get at the stores we rent or buy, how long is that going to be retained on that disc? Have they had a test to find out how long those things will last?
Yeah, you know, we kind of look at DVDs and CDs, too, for that matter, for music, and say, oh, that's forever. I'll never forget when CDs came out, I was working as a DJ in radio, and the program director came out, and he said, look, no more vinyl records. And he took the CDs and he tossed them. He said, and these never scratch. Well, he was wrong. he found that out very quickly. They do scratch. And we also thought, they never wear out. And they don't wear out in the same way that vinyl does, but there are some things that can cause them to wear out. DVDs and CDs both have the same basic technology. It's a plastic disc with a reflective surface on the label side, and then on the other side of the reflective surface, pits, little dips and bumps. And the laser reads those as ones and zeros, actually zeros and ones. So, and the way it does that is reflecting the light from the laser off that reflective surface in the back. So that's one way both DVDs and CDs can go bad. Even though they're sealed, if moisture or humidity can get in, that reflective surface can corrode and make them illegible. So that is about the only way those things can be damaged. If you keep them in a cool, dry, dark spot, they're like in the CD or DVD case, and it doesn't get too hot and it doesn't get too cold, they're probably going to last a good long time, longer than you and me.
I know films, the negative stuff lasts about 100
like that.
Years.
Yeah. In fact, we've got a big problem because some of those early films which were on explosive, highly flammable film stock, those have decayed or are dangerous. And we're losing a lot of these old films now because the film is falling apart. So getting them digital will preserve them forever.
I just wonder, is there somebody from the studio that's listening now can tell me what they believe those things are going to last? Because they're investing a lot of money in those movies.
Well, that's not how the studio stores them. That's the good news. The studio doesn't store them on DVDs. It delivers them to you on DVDs, and that's, by the way, changing. They're stored on hard drives in the studios and in movie theaters. In fact, when a movie theater, most movie theaters have gone digital, there's two ways they will get the movie. One is in a big stack of hard drives, although that's less common. More and more, they're getting them the way we often get our movies these days over the internet. Digital delivery is really a good way to get them to the movie theaters. So the good news is those movies are going to last as long as somebody keeps an eye on them, make sure they transfer them from a hard drive to the 3D optical cube storage or whatever it is that's big next. That's the biggest problem. If you think about it, it's a problem for all data. Digital data now is going to last forever. Because, you know, as long as you keep every 10, 20, 30, 100 years transferring it, the real issue is, can you read it? If you had data on a zip disk, for instance, and you still have the zip disk, that data is probably still good, even though that's not the best medium ever. But who has a zip drive to read it? And so that's going to be the issue going forward, is we've got the data. It's on a hard drive. I just can't connect it to the Tandy 9 million XPG computer I have because it only uses holographic cube storage. That's going to be the issue, is the formats and the way this stuff is stored. So this is actually a fascinating topic that the modern librarians are very into digital. It's all about digital archiving, digital archivists. How do you keep this stuff alive? And it's not so much bit rot, stuff wearing out. It's just keeping up with the formats. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's... Can you read it physically, but can you also play back that file format?
What's this MOV file?
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and smartphones and all that digital jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. I asked James DeRuvo, who takes our notes, to put a link to a Washington Post article from a couple of years back in our show notes so you can read it. It's about the Library of Congress. They have, I didn't realize this, we were talking about old movies and the responsibility of movie companies to kind of preserve our cultural heritage and the issues that are faced because, of course, the old film stock is disintegrating. Some of it's explosive. Putting it on a DVD, well, makes it digital or a hard drive, but it doesn't really solve the problem long term because in a, you know, a decade or two, will somebody have a DVD player? Will somebody have a hard drive? Well, maybe the Library of Congress will. They apparently keep hardware for playing back this stuff, like all kinds of hardware, even old video game machines. They have the National Digital Information Infrastructure and Preservation Program, where they store not just the content, but the devices required to play back the content. 8-tracks and cassette players, wire recorders, 2-inch video players, and the like. It's so fascinating. It turns out one of the folks in our chat room works for a company called The Cutting Archives, cuttingarchives.com, where they can play back a huge amount of audio and video stuff on old, old gear, digitize it, and give it to you on a disc. Of course, you still have that problem, you know, that the disc is not going to be readable. Maybe, I mean, there's two problems. There's the physical issue of, can I actually plug it into something that can read it? And second, can that thing read it? Can it read that old video format or that old audio format? So it really is an interesting issue that is, you know, on the one hand, has somewhat been solved because digitizing means we can make infinite perfect copies. That's good news. You know, once a film is digitized, you can make copies in 100 different places. It's much less likely to get lost. But then you still have that issue of how do we play back the digital version? If you want to save something forever, what's the best way? Well, paper. Print it. Doesn't need anything special to read it. Although, I guess if it's written in a long-dead language, we may not be able to read it. And a picture certainly is going to continue to be worth 1,000 words as long as people have eyes. But it's not a perfect solution for a movie. I mean, we have it printed on film, and the film is disintegrating. So it's a fascinating subject. The good news is people are paying attention to it. And who better than the Library of Congress? That's the job of the Library of Congress. Moving on, 8888-ASK-LEO, Judy in Placentia, California. Hi, Judy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you, Judy? Oh, did I press the right button? I did. I don't hear anything. Uh-oh, am I worried? Should I be worried? Let me try another caller and see. Sandra, are you there in Corona, California?
Hi, Leo.
Yes, you are. I'll put Judy on hold to see if you can get her back, Heather. Hey, welcome to the show, Sandra.
Thank you. Listen, I've got a cat who eats my headphones. I can't keep her away from them. It's just amazing. And I hate buying the, you go to the OEM, you know, the manufacturer, like Apple, and they want, like, you know, $25 or whatever, you know.
Just to resolder it, huh?
Well, no, this is to buy new headphones.
Yeah.
Well,
don't let your cat eat your headphones, that's for sure. You know who's really notoriously bad is bunny rabbits. We used to have a bunny rabbit. I learned this lesson the hard way many years ago. And the bunny rabbit, we let him run around the house because he's cute. He's fuzzy. He's a bunny rabbit.
Yeah.
But they would go right under my desk where all the wires were. We're very lucky he didn't get electrocuted because bunnies, it turns out, love to chew things. I think it's how they keep their teeth, sharp and not too long. And so it's a natural thing for them to chew electrical cords. Cats, you know, that's a habit. I don't think all cats chew electrical cords. I don't know what the solution is.
I just wanted a replacement that was not so expensive, that would be a decent quality.
Well, if you think $25 is expensive, I'm not going to have much help for you.
These are just earbuds.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely better headphones, but they're a lot more than $25. Good headphones are very expensive, hundreds of dollars.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And now, do you want to continue with earbuds, or would you like to go with something over the ear, a different style?
Well, I could be flexible.
I mean, the truth is, if you think the Apple earbuds sound fine, then there are lots of less expensive, very similar products from Skull Candy and others that you could even find at the Apple store that are cheaper. And if you're going to go through them, yeah, you definitely don't want to get $300 headphones if the cat's going to eat them.
So, well, I'm trying to keep them away, but sometimes I just forget.
Yeah. Yeah, so don't spend a lot of money on headphones. Now, I think, frankly, that kids today are missing out. I think most kids are using the earbuds that came with their phone or their iPod, and they're not very good. And so they're not really hearing the music as it was intended. They're also perhaps damaging their ears because not only are headphones louder and you can turn them up to a damaging level, they're also, because of the way they reproduce the music, maybe not very accurately. They're actually more damaging because of the frequencies. So let's keep the headphones away from the cat. And if you want better headphones, you certainly are going to spend more money. If you want cheap headphones, there are a lot of choices out there that are less than the Apple headphone. It's a very big category. In fact, that's why Apple just bought Beats for $3 billion. Their headphone business has been very lucrative because, frankly, it doesn't cost much to make headphones.
And there's a lot of cats out there.
And there are a lot of cats. Somebody in the chat room saying tweaked audio is good. I'll tell you what, tweaked audio. These are all inexpensive. There are lots of cheap earbuds out there. Now, I happen to use... here's a good place to go for all of this stuff, by the way. Thank you, chat room, for reminding me. Monoprice.com. This is a company that specializes in selling the kinds of things we all spend an awful lot of money for, but at a much more reasonable cost. And I found that their quality is very good. They also sell earbuds for $6.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're every bit as good. $6.21. They're every bit as good as the Apple headphones.
And did you say Monoprice?
MonoPrice.com. $6.21. Enhanced bass hi-fi earphones with built-in microphone and line controls.
So, oh, that's what I'm going to do. That
yeah, just get that's 10 of them.
Yeah.
And then let Kitty dine on the old ones.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
I have an iPhone 4S.
Okay.
And the sound goes out on it intermittently. And, like, for instance, I have a little Zynga poker that I play, you know, and it makes little sounds. And just all of a sudden, it'll go away, you know. Or,
does it go away on headphones? Does it go away on the speaker or both?
I think it's just on the speaker.
Just on the speaker. The headphones seem to work always.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. So you probably, it is an older phone. It's 3 years old now, and it probably is something shaking loose on the connection to the speaker. And if it comes and goes, but the headphones are fine, then we know it's the speaker.
Oh, so it's a hardware thing.
It's a hardware thing, yeah. If the headphones still work, you know, if you never have this problem as long as you're plugged into the headphone jack, but when it's just on the speaker on the phone, it happens, then I think it's likely that it's just a speaker connection is loose, unless you're running some software that's interrupting it or something like that. But that believe me, on a 3-year-old phone, it's getting shaken around. That's not unusual. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Or maybe your cat's eating it. I don't know. We found even cheaper ones, $2. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, Sandra's call has created a storm in the chat room of people recommending their favorite headphones. Headphones are pretty personal, aren't they? They sit on your ears. Only you hear the music. I love headphones. It's a great way to listen to music. When I was growing up, many years ago, the thing to do was you get the album, go to the record store. What's that, Daddy? And you get a record, which you put on your turntable, drop the needle on, and then you take the liner notes in the sleeve, which is, you know, a foot by a foot, and you put on your COS Pro 440A headphones. They weigh about 8 pounds, and you lie on your back with your feet in the air, and you read the liner notes while you listen to Steppenwolf or whatever. Those were the days. But that was the way a lot of people of my generation listened to music was on headphones, because you could rock it out and your mom and dad wouldn't mind and so forth. The times have changed. People are listening to headphones more than ever because of mobile devices. But unfortunately, all of these mobile devices, and I have to include all of Apple's products, came with very poor, inexpensive earbuds, you know, the kind that fall out of your ear. And people have just gotten used to that. And so what happened is a lot of companies observed that, hey, people don't really know what a good headphone is. So we'll make a $10 headphone and charge $200 for it and put some styling on it, get some famous musician to wear them in the ad, and profit. So there are a lot of headphones now. It is a very crowded market because it's a very profitable market. Beats, for a long time, this is the company Apple bought, was formed by Dr. Dre, featured prominent musicians wearing their headphones. There's certain, you know, their style, you see them everywhere with a little lowercase B on them, and all the hip kids are wearing them. When Beats first started, they were made by Monster, you know, and sold under the Beats name, and Beats was hideously profitable, making more than $1 billion a year in profits. But unfortunately for Beats, a couple of years into it, they decided they were going to design and make their own headphones, and the profit went out of the business. So the key is not to care how good they sound, not to worry, because the kids don't know. So it's a very profitable market, but it's also, because you're selling, in many cases, to kids, there's also a low-end market too. And I think in many cases, not all, but most cases, the $200 headphones don't sound any better than the $20 headphones. And the $6 headphones that sold at a mono price are probably as good as any of them. And certainly if you don't really care about music, spend $6. If you care about music, then you need to go somewhere where other people care about music, really review these headphones, test them out, try them out, and give you a good information about what works and what doesn't work. And you'll see there are a lot of people who have very strong opinions about headphones. Most of the people in the chat room say, oh, no, I'll only wear XYZ. And I, you know, I'm a little bit, because I'm on the radio and I wear headphones all day long, I'm a little bit of a headphone junkie myself. Anybody in my business or the music business is. Right now, I'm wearing AKG K240 headphones. You've seen them. They're very common in recording studios. So if you ever see a video of somebody making music, very often they're wearing those AKG headphones. I think really it's not so much that their sound quality is good, it's very good, but that they're very comfortable over-the-ear headphones that you can wear all day. I think that's the main reason radio types wear them. I wear, you know, at home I wear Etymotics, Etymotics. Excellent. High fidelity in-ear monitors. They stick in your ear and they're great for airplanes or anywhere it's in a noisy environment. Don't wear them walking down the road though, because you can't hear a car coming up behind you. A lot of audiophiles swear by Grados, Grados, and they make some inexpensive headphones as well as some expensive ones. I don't find them too comfortable, but they certainly sound good. Most of the time I go to a place called Headroom. They're not an advertiser, but I'm going to give them a little plug. They sell headphones, and they're kind of headphone nuts. And so I read their reviews of headphones, and I think that they're pretty accurate when they say something's good. So their current top 10 headphones are Shure, Audio-Technica, Sennheiser, names we've probably heard for years, Klipsch, Grado, and something I've never heard of called the Wheatstone. Wheatstone. None of these, by the way, are inexpensive. The least expensive is the Klipsch Image, which is only $50. That's a good price for a very nice pair of headphones. Most of them are well over $100. And if you really want great headphones, you're going to be spending many, many more hundreds of dollars. And I think a lot of it is, it maybe is black magic. A lot of it's kind of in the ear of the beholder. So I'm not going to make it. You know, at my age, I shouldn't be making any recommendations. But there's some ideas, Sandra. If you're happy with your Apple earbuds, don't spend more than $6. Go to monoprice.com and get the six. They even have $1.99 headphones there, and they're just as good. And if Kitty wants to eat them, you don't care. They do limit you to 10 at once. You can only buy 10 at a time. Judy, and now I think we've got Judy back in Placentia. Hi, Judy. I hear a high-pitched whine. Now, you talked to her?
I just talked to her.
Judy?
This is weird.
Judy?
Hello, Judy.
All right. Back on hold. How about we go to Doug in Santa Ana, California? Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Just great. I have a couple of boxes of Fortran cards that I'd really like to play.
There's a great example. Those punch cards don't fold, spindle, and mutilate.
And they don't fit in the CD drive.
You put them in the CD drive. Nothing happens, huh?
Mm. Yeah, that's it. Anyhow, we are going to develop, we're just preparing to develop a new website. And for the first time in the company's history, we're going to go to some e-commerce. And I was referred to somebody that suggested, because they're a great web developer and they like Magento, they suggested that we ought to be on Magento for our new website. Then I happened to be talking to my local GoDaddy tech guy, and he was saying, well, you know, gee, we can do just about the same thing, and it doesn't require a dedicated server, a whole lot less money.
There's a lot of ways to skin this cat. There's Shopify. Yeah. There's BigCommerce. Our sponsor, Squarespace, offers commerce. You know, a couple of ways to do it. One, you could buy shopping cart software that you'd run on your own site. You can use a third-party service like Shopify. BigCommerce hosts the entire site with their own templates. Same thing with Squarespace. You're on GoDaddy right now?
Yes.
I'm not a big GoDaddy fan, to be honest with you. They do a shared server solution that's very inexpensive, but you're on the same hardware as a many, sometimes thousands of other sites. And if one of them has a problem, all of them have a problem. So I don't like that kind of shared hosting, particularly. Let me talk about e-commerce and some other solutions when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we were talking with Doug in Santa Ana, and, you know, this is a big question. We get every once in a while questions like, you know, who's the best hosting provider? Who's the best e-commerce provider? And that's a big question with lots of parameters, and it really, some of it's going to be who's the best for you. I don't think GoDaddy's offering is comparable to Magento's. I think Magento is actually pretty good. We were mentioning that one of the things that I recommend and I like is offering payments through Amazon, which many of your customers already have an account with. Magento can do that, or with Google. Again, many people will already have Google Wallet, and Magento supports that. So I'd look at that kind of thing, because remember, you've got a lot of what e-commerce is about. Well, there's a number of things. First of all, of course, if you make it hard for somebody to buy something, they won't. So your shopping cart needs to be simple, straightforward, clear, easy to use. So anybody you're considering, I would say, well, give me an example of somebody using your site, and I'd like to try it. And if you feel frustrated at any point, if you know, if it's difficult to use, if it seems hostile, and a lot of them do, don't do it. It should be as friction-free as possible. That's why people buy online. And then the other issue is trust. Unless people know your company, there's a little bit of, I think for experienced users, a little bit of nervousness about buying from a company you've never bought before. It always reassures me when they offer something like Amazon payments. In fact, I'll always do it. A, because I feel like Amazon's going to back it up. B, because I have to do less data entry. Amazon already has my credit card. It just reassures me. To a lesser degree, PayPal, eBay. I trust Google. I think it's good to offer a choice on checkout. Say, how would you like to check out? Would you like to give us a credit card or go through PayPal or Amazon? That's a nice thing to do. So, and then you have to look at additional support for things like shipping. Are you going to do the fulfillment? If you are, then a shipping calculator will be very handy. And the variety of services it supports, if it supports all the big shipping services, that's great. So there's lots to look at. We're going to put in the show notes a couple of links to Wikipedia articles that compare e-commerce solutions in terms of features, security, and a lot of things. And I would absolutely look at that. But fundamentally, to me, a good e-commerce system is all about your customers. It's got to be easy for them. They have to feel like it's trustworthy. They have to want to shop with you. And I'm always amazed at how many places make it difficult to buy. You know, it makes me, if I'm getting nervous or I'm frustrated, or worse, if I've entered all my stuff and then I have to, you know, it crashes or something goes wrong and they say, oh, your password has punctuation, let's not use that, and then it blanks everything out. Things like that, I don't go back. I end the transaction. I'm finicky that way, but I think a lot of buyers are. I'll end the transaction and I'll go somewhere else. And that's what you live in today. If you're living in e-commerce, you're living in a very competitive environment where customers don't have a lot of loyalty, where they can move easily, fluidly to other sources. It's easy for them to buy, find the best price, the best service. So you've really got to bend over backwards to super serve the customer. And that's why Amazon has succeeded, hasn't it? Because they provide customer service second to none. Good luck, Doug. I think it's certainly valuable. If you could start selling online successfully, you've opened up a whole new market, the global market. And certainly a lot of people in the chat room have thoughts about what they like the best. I'm not sure really which one I would use. We use Squarespace, of course. If I have to sell anything, I'm going to go through Squarespace. But I'm already there, right? And to me, they do a great job. Here's a blog. In fact, we'll put this in the show notes too. Comparing Magento, Shopify, Volusion, and BigCommerce: pros and cons. This is a site called Udemy. This is good. You always when you read reviews like this, you want to make sure that these sites are independent and they're not trying to, they're not being paid to feature one or the other. And this one, Udemy is online education, so I think this is probably a fairly good read here. But you can read about all the different choices, good, the bad, the ugly. 8888 Ask Leo. Dave in Victorville, California, you're next. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm all right. I've just been dealing with, I was listening to the show all morning on iHeart. I thought I'd give you the plug in the iHeart radio.
Thank you. Are you listening on the web or on mobile?
I was listening to my iPad, the mobile.
It's great, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. It really fills the gaps. But I've been having a problem. I've got a Generation 1 iPad, which, I don't know. It's probably one of 10 that are left alive.
But I'm sure there are millions around, but Apple is doing their best to get you to buy a new one, especially since they're not updating you to iOS 7 and you won't get iOS 8 either.
No, and that's the problem, too. That's another problem for a different day, but the problem I'm having that I'd like to address is that I can't charge it. It's not, it's finicky. It's, at best, it's finicky because more often than not, I get a warning that says charging is not supported with this accessory.
Well,
so, the thing is I'm using the regular charger.
You are, okay. So, the reason they put that warning in there is because the iPad requires a 10-watt charger. And by definition, USB is not 10 watts. So the Apple has had to kind of upgrade its own hardware to make it support the 10 watts needed by the iPad. Even the original iPad. The newer iPads require even more. But it should, of course, the charger that came with it is 10 watts.
It should be fine.
Yeah, I would try another charger, just make sure it's not that charger, including another cable. Could be a short in the cable. But it's also old enough that it could be in the connector itself. You know, the connectors take a lot of wear and tear as you plug it in and unplug it. So if you can find if you have a Mac, late model Mac, that has enough juice, or another 10-watt charger for an iPad, and another 30-pin cable, just to make sure that it's not the you know, you always want to test the easy things to fix first, the cable, the charger. If it's still doing that, then it's probably the connector on the iPad. Now, you know that after a certain number of charges, around about 500, that lithium-ion battery won't take a charge.
Well, like I said before, it is kind of finicky, and I have been able to trick it into a
Well, it sounds like it works
there,
sometimes, but... yeah, which means it's probably not the battery worn out. It's probably the connector, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, the connector on the iPad itself, right? Because even when I plug it into my iMac, I've got a pretty updated iMac. Okay. It's only a couple years old.
Have you tried a different 30-pin? Try a different 30-pin cable too, right?
No, I will. I'll have to get a new one of those.
Yeah, because it could that cable is going to wear out faster, frankly, than the iPad connector.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So I would try to see if you can borrow somebody's. Don't go buy a 30-pin cable, but see if you can borrow somebody's and see if it's that, because it could very well just be the cable. This is, you know, I talk about this a lot in terms of troubleshooting. You always start with the cheap, easy solution first. Hope it's that. Hope it's the cable. That's easy to fix. Maybe it's the charger. That's fairly easy to fix. If it's the iPad, not so easy to fix. And they wear out. That thing is, 4 years old now, round about 4 years old. The battery will stop taking a charge sometime in the near future. If that happens, your only recourse is to bring it to Apple, and for $100 they put a new battery in. And I probably wouldn't say do that at this point. That thing is old enough that you probably want to get a newer iPad. They kind of force you into it, unfortunately. Costco, somebody saying, has good deals on iPad Airs. You're going to see good deals as we get to the October timeframe for the new iPad on the older ones, I think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The waning moments of the Tech Guy Show. And since the moments are waning, let's bring in Nick DiBartolo, who is going to sing us out with the gadget of the week. Dick is Mad Magazine's maddest writer. The Gizwiz, we call him, because he's such a gadget hound. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I am well.
Good.
I am well. Is Myra in there with you?
Myra's in there, and that game you're playing.
Yes, Clash.
Took out the entire front wall of Disneyland. So
what?
I don't know what you're doing.
Ah, my mortar attack was successful.
Yeah.
You know what would be fun, wouldn't it, to have iPad games that tie into real life so that, like,
yes,
if you blow something up, it actually goes?
That would be great. You could raise your own salary. You could go into the accounting department over the weekend when they're not there.
This is cool. Did you see this? They handed this out at Google I.O. It's a cardboard virtual reality device. You put an Android phone in it, and special software launches that allows you. It looks kind of, if you look through it, it kind of looks like a ViewMaster. It's even got a little magnetic button on the side.
Oh,
but you can do 3D things. It's really...
That's clever.
It's really cool. It's like a virtual reality helmet for $20. It's made out of cardboard.
Yeah. You know, I thought the brick house was 3D.
I don't need this. I'm in a third world, 3D.
Yes, you're 3D already,
pal.
Yeah. You don't need no $20 device.
Whoa, reset my phone. Wait a minute. That wasn't good. Never mind.
Okay.
Maybe you have a good gadget. What's your
I
gadget?
I do. You know what? This is a neat little gadget called iBlazer.
iBlazer.
B-L-A-Z-R, no E in it. And this is a fully synchronized flash for iPads, any device that doesn't have a flash, or any device where you're really in a dark area and you want to have an extremely bright flash.
I mean, it's like a flash cube for your iPad?
Yes, exactly. And it has its own internal battery, so it doesn't draw from the iPad. It works through the headphone jack. It comes with a little stand, so if you want to use it like as a flashlight or you want to light something that you're videotaping, you can take it off the camera. The little stand that they send you with can also act as a cold flash stand for a, you know, more advanced camera.
Wow.
And you can use, in the instructions, it says you can use an audio cable and plug the audio cable into your phone, audio extension cable, then plug the iBlazer into the audio extension cable and use it for an off-camera flash. You get 500 flashes out of a single charge. And I'm going to take it with me like to CES. When you go to a booth where it's very dark, I can have my own really miniature video light. It's 1 inch.
Oh, so you can have it always be on for video.
Exactly.
Oh.
Always on for video. It is 60 lux, 120 lux. It is very clever.
So this was a Kickstarter project that raised $156,000.
Yes, $100,000 more than they were looking for.
Wow. Kickstarter has really become the place to go if you
want
to.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
I'm just
very
glad
nicely
they
made
it. I'm just really glad they made it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's neat.
Under $50, and if for some reason you want the professional model that's aluminum, that I think is $20 more.
Very cool. iBlazer.com. No E.
Correct.
You know, you really want the new Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
Because it features me.
Yeah.
I wish I were on the cover, but okay, you know.
Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. He was happy for 1 week. For 1 week.
No, I'm being silly. I couldn't be more thrilled. I know it's not the practice of Mad Magazine to have unfamous people in their covers.
You're famous.
I don't know about that. But you know what's cool? I overheard a conversation between Jerry Seinfeld and Howard Stern, in which they said the highlights of their career were having their faces immortalized in Mad Magazine. Now I'm up in there with them.
You are, pal. And Michael J. Fox is in that category, too.
Yes. I mean, that is a high price. If you go to gizwiz.biz, you can get a copy of Mad Magazine. I guess it's the October issue. By
it's
playing
the October, correct.
What the heck is it? This is Dick's kind of fun contest where you see a picture of something and you have to identify it. Now, there's 12 autographed copies of Mad. It's not just a Mad Magazine. It's autographed by Dick, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. You get 12 copies for the right answer, 24 for the best wrong answer. So a wrong answer is okay. Now, you only have till the end of the month, a couple more weeks left to play this What the Heck Is It? And you are playing for that October issue of Mad Magazine. Forget Alfred E. Newman. It's got Leo E. Laporte in there.
Yes, exactly.
That is
Chad great. And Dick and Lisa.
Yeah. Have you? You've been in it before, I'm sure.
I've been in it mostly my picture as Chick Glitz, my alter eagle,
so,
ego.
So to have somebody immortalize you in a caricature is pretty high.
Pretty neat. Pretty nifty.
And for you, that's exciting.
Tom Richmond surprised me. I did not know I was in it until the artwork came back.
Well, thank you, Tom. He did a pretty fair caricature of both me and Lisa. I think it's
great.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm pretty happy with it.
Super, super.
Well, thank you, Dickie D. Stick around. The Giz Fizz coming up right after the radio show. And don't forget Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. The only thing wrong with this picture of me, I'm wearing a suit.
Yeah, well, Tom has an imagination.
I've never so dressed up in my life. And it's so great that Lisa's in there, too. I think that's just fantastic. And it looks just like her. She's
super,
wearing
super.
Red, too, which is exactly right. And Mark Cuban's standing in between us. So, hey, thank you, Dickie D.
Great.
Hang out.
Thank you, sir.
Bradley in Georgetown, Ontario. Nice to talk to you. Hi, Bradley. Welcome.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm very well.
That's good. So I was wondering about getting a Chromebook because I'm going into grade 9 this year. And
I think it's perfect for a student. I really do. I'm more and more convinced.
And I was using a regular computer through middle school, kind of more grade 8. And I just realized all the stuff I could do,
yeah.
I could just use it all with the Chromebook.
Right. So, the beauty in the Chromebook, you know, I try Chromebooks all the time, is you just log on to your Google account and all your Google Docs are there. You know, schools and more, Google just announced this new classroom program, which is kind of a free replacement for Moodle or Blackboard. Many schools are using Google Docs, the word processors, the spreadsheet, the slideshow program in lieu of the expensive Microsoft Office. These are inexpensive computers, so if you lose one, it's not the end of the world. No viruses. The complexity is much simpler because it's essentially just Chrome OS. It's just a browser. Yeah, I think they're great. My current favorite is the Acer C720.
Okay.
But if you can wait, I know you're almost going back to school any minute now. That's $200. The next Acer, the 13-inch, is going to be running a fast NVIDIA K1 processor and has 4 gigs of RAM. That makes a difference. 4 gigs is a nice thing to have on a Chromebook. But that's not, it's pre-order right now. It's not out yet, and the Acer has not said when that'll be available. The second generation of that, the one with the new K1 processor, will be even faster. These are getting better and better. Highly recommended, Bradley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Geek Week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.